Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hungry Planet when we come back. You know, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child in the world. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, you know, we produce grain for export, but then our grapes are imported from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2000 population reduction program. Now, globalization may be good for business, but globalization is bad for you and it's bad for me. Back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year or more. Today, we have a three-day supply in our refrigerators, and we believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all forever. But over the past 60 years, we have traded a one-year food supply for 3 days. And these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90%. Over the next 50 years or so says the Club of Rome. These evil madmen with their global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause. But let's, you and I, live for ours. So let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. All right, this time let's take a look at Hungry Planet from a little different perspective. Down in Zimbabwe, there is a food crisis going on because of the hyperinflation that has ravaged their economy and their monetary system. More than 2 million people in Zimbabwe, who are close to one-fifth of the Southern African country's population, are in need of food aid, the Red Cross said on Thursday. More than 2 million people in Zimbabwe. The International Red Cross renewed its call for support for the region in a statement saying that an estimated 2.17 million people are in need of food aid, and the number is going to increase throughout 2010. In some parts of the country, the food situation is as bad as many of our volunteers and staff have ever seen it, said Emma Kandisera, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Red Cross Society, in a statement. The agency said that some areas have seen drought, while others have been inundated with too much rain, damaging staple crops like corn. The country, once the breadbasket of Africa, has also been facing shortages of fertilizer and seed. Let me underline that one for you. They're facing shortages of fertilizer and seed. And that's because their money's no good and they can't buy it. So they have to rely upon what they've got. Farmers' organizations in the region forecast local corn harvest this year of some 435,000 tons, with annual consumption at about 1.6 million tons. Well, boys and girls, let's see, 1,600 million, let's just put 1,600 down there, and then let's take away 435, gives them a shortage of 1,165. That's a pile. They're about two-thirds short. They're going to produce about one-third what they need. Now, that's not primarily because they've got drought and famine, flood. That doesn't help them any. But their primary problem is their economy collapsed. Their money system collapsed. They went into hyperinflation. Their money's no good. They can't buy anything. Since they can't produce anything because their money system won't buy the raw materials to bring in to turn out a finished product, now they're between a rock and a hard spot. Now, that's what's coming to everybody in the world. What we're watching in Zimbabwe, the collapse of the fiat money system. And what will that do to the world? Well, remember last time we took a look at 12 problems, 12 signs of the times that will produce the collapse of civilization. Remember, monoculture, soil destruction, vaccination, number 4 was fiat paper currency. Now, in the past, fiat paper currencies have ruined nations, but they never ruined the whole world all at the same time because we never had a worldwide economy and we never had a worldwide fiat currency until the present age. You know, up until the last 100 years, you know, we had gold and silver. Now we have fiat currency, and the fiat currency doesn't affect just one, two, or five countries in the world. It affects every country in the world, and the financial crisis now is affecting everybody, including the Chinese and Japanese and everybody else. Now, the Chinese are sitting there with about $3 trillion worth of commercial paper that they have amassed and that they have saved, which is valueless because the people that issued that paper are bankrupt and can't make it good. And in the final analysis, it's not how much money do you have, it's how much do you have in the way of goods. It's not how many dollars do you have to buy corn, it's how much corn do you have, period. And people in Zimbabwe, if things go right, will have 435,000 tons of corn, but they need 1.6 million tons. They're going to be short about two-thirds of the amount of corn that they've got. They've got no shortage of money. They're printing money just as fast as they can print it. In fact, Zimbabwe now holds the second-place championship for inflation or hyperinflation. Their money depreciates by half every 24 hours. Or put another way, prices in Zimbabwe double every day. So if the price of something is a dollar today, tomorrow it'll be two, and the next day it'll be four, and the next day it'll be eight, and so on up the line. The country that holds the record is Hungary in 1946. Their prices doubled every 15 hours. Zimbabwe, their prices only double every 24.7 hours. Isn't that just special? But that's coming to everybody in the world shortly. And the results that come from hyperinflation are going to visit us all. That's why I mentioned this book called Hungry Planet. You can get a copy of it now from, seed store? Baker Creek Seeds. There it is. Baker Creek Seeds in Mansfield, Missouri. Write that down. Baker Creek Seeds. That's where you get your open pollinated seeds, by the way. And they've got the book Hungry Planet, and they've got the other two books that I mentioned to you, which is Genetic Roulette. Genetic Roulette by Jeffrey M. Smith and Seeds of Deception, same author, Jeffrey M. Smith, dealing with genetically modified seeds. We talked about that last time. But this time, I want to talk to you about money because there are some heavy-duty events coming down. I'm not going to tell you that they're going to happen in the next 30, 60, or 90 days. I haven't got any idea when they're coming down. But many of the people who are watching world events, you know, economists and investors and stock brokers and people that are in the know, people in politics, people with the Illuminati, contacts with the Bilderbergers and so on, the insiders. Listen to some of these. Bob Chapman says, the first 6 months of 2010, now this is the sixth month of 2010, June, Americans will continue to live in the unreality. The period between July and October is when the financial fireworks are going to begin. The Fed will act unilaterally for its own survival, irrespective of any political implications. Now, the source is from an insider at the Fed meetings. In the last quarter of the year, we could even see martial law, which is more likely for the first 6 months of 2011. The FDIC will collapse in September of 2010. Commercial real estate is set to implode in 2010. Wall Streeters believe there's a 100% chance of a crash in the bond market, especially municipal bonds, sometime during 2010, and the dollar will be devalued by the end of 2010. None of that sounds good. Those aren't green shoots, boys and girls. That's bad news for all of us. So the point that I'm making here in this series of programs is, what is it that you and I can do that will give us a better edge or a leg up when these events transpire? I don't like to use the time frame of 2010. I can't tell you that it's going to happen in 2010 or 2011 or 2012. I can tell you that it's going to happen because it's always worked out that way in the past. Sometimes sooner than later, but sometimes later than sooner. Trying to put a date on an event gets egg on your face most of the time, unless you're a prophet, of which I'm not one of them. Gerald Celente put it this way, said, terrorist attacks and the crash of 2010. 40% devaluation at first, the greatest depression, worse than the Great Depression. He's expecting a 40% devaluation of our money. He's expecting it in 2010. But you know, if it doesn't come till 2011 or 2012, it doesn't help us a great deal except for the time frame. It gives us a little more time to prepare. But the eventual collapse of the economy is on the way. It's already cast in cement. You're not gonna derail this train. And George Urey put it this way, markets up until mid to late summer, then all hell breaks loose from then on through the rest of the year. And so he too is picking midsummer, July, August, long in there. In the summer of 1998, based on classified data about the state of the U.S. economy and society supplied to him by fellow FAPSI analysts, Panarin forecast the probable disintegration of the United States into six parts in 2010, at the end of June, start of July 2010, as he specified on 10 December 2000. So he's expecting a breakup of the society as well as a collapse of the monetary system. Neither corpse, has a projection. They've projected that the third and final stage of the economic collapse will begin sometime in 2010, barring some kind of financial miracle or the complete dissolution of the Federal Reserve. A snowballing implosion should become visible by the end of the year. The behavior of the Federal Reserve, along with that of the IMF, seems to suggest that they are preparing for a focused collapse, peaking within weeks or months instead of years, and the most certain fall of the dollar. Webbets, July and onward, things get very strange. Revolution, perhaps. Dollar dead by November 2010. George Urey. Markets up until mid to late summer, then all hell breaks loose from then on through the rest of the year. Leap. 2010 outlook from a ground, or a group rather, of 25 European economists with about a 90% accuracy rating. We anticipate a sudden intensification of the crisis in the second half of 2010, caused by a double effect of a catching up of events which were temporarily frozen in the second half of 2009, and the impossibility of maintaining the palliative remedies of the past few years. There is a perfect economic storm coming within the global financial markets and inevitable pressure on interest rates in the United States. The injection of zero-cost money into the Western banking system has failed to restart the economy. Despite zero-cost money, the system has stalled. It is slowly rolling over into the next big downwave, which in Elliott wave terminology will be super cycle wave 3, or in common language, the big one, where we all go over the falls together. Joseph Meyer forecasts on the economy. He sees the real estate market continuing to decline and advised people to invest in precious metals and commodities, as well as keeping cash at home in a safe place in case of bank closures. The stock market, after peaking in March or April around 10,000, will fall all the way down to somewhere between 2450 and 4125 during the next leg down. If you've got money in stocks, bonds, commercial paper, get ready, because this is where the big downturn comes. And if it doesn't happen this year, then it'll be next. Richard Russell, market expert from 2310, this is back in February, he said the bear market rally is in the process of breaking up and panic is on the way. He sees a full correction of the entire rise from the 2002 low of 7286 to the bull market high of 14164, which was set on October the 9th, 2007. The halfway level of retracement or retracement was 10,725. The total retracement was to 6,547 on March 9th of 2009. He now sees the Dow falling to 7,286, and if that level doesn't hold, I see it sinking to its 1980 to 82 area of a low of the Dow around 1,000. The current action is the worst that he has ever seen. Bob Chapman says for Russell to make such a startling statement is unusual, because he never cries wolf and he's almost never wrong. Richard Russell, now remember, is one of those markets, like the Dow Jones. Well, this is the Russell 500, I believe it's called. Nino Becerra, professor of economics, predicted in July of 07 that what was going to happen was that by mid-2010, there's going to be a crisis only comparable to the one in 1929. From October of 09 to May of 10, people will begin to see things are not working out the way the government thought they would. In May of 2010, the crisis starts with all of its force and continues and strengthens throughout 2011. He accurately predicted the current recession and market crash to the month. Now, notice that May in the markets was the worst month since 1940. Worst month since 1940 in the markets. Lyndon LaRouche, Democratic presidential nominee, well, not nominee, but candidate, Lyndon LaRouche. He said the crisis is accelerating and will become worse week by week until the whole system grinds into collapse, like sometime this year. And when it does, it'll be the greatest collapse since the fall of the Roman Empire. That's quite a statement, fall of the Roman Empire. And that's a little worse than 1929. Wall Street Journal, 2-2010, we are witnessing a fundamental breakdown of the American dream, a systemic breakdown of our democracy and our capitalism, a breakdown driven by the blind, insatiable greed of Wall Street, dysfunctional government, insane markets, and an economy on the brink of collapse. Multiply that many times over, and we see a world in total disarray. Ignore it now. Tomorrow will be too late. Eric D. Carboni, or Carbonell, there is no precedent for the panic and chaos that's going to occur in 2010. The global food supply demand picture has never been so out of balance. I'm going to underline that. Notice here he says the global food supply and demand picture has never been so out of balance. Now, the global food supply is 38 days. It's actually less than that. Balance would have to be a one-year supply for everybody on the planet, because food only comes in once a year. And what we're doing here is we are relying on the delivery of foods. For instance, did you notice that when the volcano went off in Iceland, that they had to feed the asparagus in Kenya to the cattle because The asparagus, which normally is loaded on airplanes and flown into Amsterdam, couldn't be flown in. So you people in Europe rely upon your produce being grown in Kenya, in Africa, and flown in to Amsterdam in order to supply you with your fresh produce. We do the same thing here in the United States. Our fresh produce comes in from Hermosillo, Mexico. If there's a breakdown for some reason in the transportation system, such as a volcano or such as a disruption in the economic system or, we're not relying upon food that's in the warehouse in our local grocery stores down the street four blocks, or we're not relying upon the food that we have in our own pantries in our own homes or out of our own gardens, which are out in our own backyards, but rather we are relying upon workers and companies and corporations that are producing our tomatoes, our berries, our fruits, and our nuts in foreign countries and shipping them to the United States for distribution. Boys and girls, that's a national crisis in the making. Now, most people are satisfied with the status quo because so far it's always worked. It's kind of like the oil well down in the Gulf. It's now spewing out oil at the rate of about 20,000 barrels a day into the Gulf. It's been going on now for, something like a month and a half. Now, they drilled 400 of those wells and they never had a problem. And they never had a backup plan for a blowout. So on well number 401, the blowout occurred. And now that the blowout occurred, they don't have a backup plan to solve the problem. And so it is with food. We've never had a breakdown in the supply system before, and there isn't any backup system to solve that problem. And you just saw it in Europe with a crummy volcano, for crying out loud. Just a quirk, you know, just an off-the-wall event. A volcano goes off halfway around the world. In this case, not halfway around the world from Europe, but, you know, out in the middle of the big ditch. And all of a sudden, you can't get food from Kenya because of something that occurs in Iceland. Has it ever occurred to us that we may have a super volcano go off and we might have another year with no summer, such as we had in 1816, or a Carrington event like we had in 1859? You know, these are events that have already transpired. And if that happens with a population of 6 billion people and these people are getting their food from Kenya, that's going to make a whale of a lot of difference compared to people in 1816 that got their food out of their backyard. So anyway, be aware of that. And the book that we're dealing with here called Hungry Planet has a number of cases, about 40% of the cases that they're describing, of people that have an opportunity or have a chance that they can make it through this collapse. Let me tell you about two more. These are both out of China. One of them is a city family in Beijing, and the other is a country family, a village family that lives 60 miles outside of Beijing. Now look at the difference between these two and then see if you can pick the winner here. Who has the greatest chance of survival through a collapse of the economy or a breakdown in international geopolitics or a world war? And the first one over here, they're called the Dongs of Beijing. And there's a story here that goes on. I'm not going to read you the story of the family. There's four of them in the family, a man and his wife and two teenage children. They work in the city. And they have all of their food for the week put out in front of them. And they spend about $155 a week, which is right at what the United States family of four spent, $159. The Chinese family spends $155. They eat very similarly. And the price per meal is about $1.85 per meal and per person per day. So that's one family. Now there's another family in China that lives in a village. They're poorer. They live on $57.27 a week. And they have a little plot of land that they farm. They have three sheep that they raise. They have a backyard with chickens in it. And so they've got chicken, they've got sheep, they've got some corn in their field. And they spend $57 a week for six, a third more people. They've got six people in their family. That's 45 cents per person per day. And I'll leave it to you to figure out who do you think's got the better chance of survival, the guy that's got three sheep, jagged chickens, field of corn, lives on 45 cents a day. And by the way, when you look at the pictures, the family portraits of these two families, they're not skinny. In fact, they're not fat, but they are none of them are skinny. All of them are bordering on going overweight. Both families are bordering on going overweight. The two teenage children here in the Dong family, they're not overweight. One of the children here in this other family in the village borders on going overweight. The grandmother here is a little on the chunky side. This guy and his wife is a little on the chunky side. And I'm just looking at the pictures here. These people are not starving now. Not starving at all. They're not short of food. Neither family. But one family, the family that lives in the city now, gets all of their food delivered to them through the distribution system. If that distribution system is interrupted, they don't eat. The other family is not just dependent upon the distribution system. They are producing their own. They don't produce all of their own. One of the members of the family actually works in Beijing. He's a printer. He works on printing presses. He's a repairman. And they bring home a salary. One of the girls here, one of the women in this village family, works in a factory and makes $2.50 a day. And so she brings home some income. So they have two members of the family that work outside the home and bring in outside income. But the moral to the story is, knock that off, and they still have a means of providing for themselves, which I think is going to be crucial. So write this down. Remember Baker Creek Seeds? Well, Baker Creek Seeds is the place to go, not just a place, but the place to go for organic, open-pollinated seed. We call that heirloom seed, seed that reproduces. It's not hybridized. It's not genetically modified. It's ancient seed. It's been around for thousands of years and reproduces when you plant it. Now, for those of you living in the cities, hybrid seed does not reproduce when you plant it. If you take the seed out of your cucumbers and plant them next year, they'll grow wonderful plants with no fruit. Tuck that one away in your heart. These genetically modified plants reproduce, and they produce death. Now, the story from Genetic Roulette and from the other book that Jeffrey M. Smith wrote, which is called Seeds of Deception, and we'll tell you why. I've covered both of those books and reported on them in the past. That one's a killer because they're in violation of Leviticus 19:19. There's no such thing, boys and girls, as a broken law without a penalty. And if you eat genetically modified food, you are going to reduce the effectiveness of your immune system to a point that, coupled with your vaccinations, will produce a weakened body, which, when it is put under stress, will die from some opportunistic disease. Now, that's where you're headed. Vaccination could, of and by itself, destroy mankind, destroy our civilization. Now, remember, the Messiah said in Matthew 24:22, he says, if I don't step in here and intervene, there will no flesh be saved alive on planet Earth. I don't know whether he's talking about every cockroach and every worm or just talking about mankind. I can't tell. But he said the term, or used the term, no flesh saved alive. So I throw that out for your consideration. Just like riding on the Titanic, we're sitting in the A-deck lounge, sipping on our margaritas, and we're discussing the voyage. And some guy comes in and says, I had a vision. And in my vision, in my dream, this ship hits an iceberg and sinks in 2 hours and 20 minutes. And we say, why don't you sit down and have a drink here, Bob? You've been imagining too much. This is an unsinkable ship. That's why we don't have lifeboats for everybody on board. Don't need them. Now, I don't know what those people were thinking about, because if the ship is unsinkable, then you don't need any lifeboats at all. And so I can't understand why you'd put half enough lifeboats on the ship if it's unsinkable. If, on the other hand, you're not quite sure, and you say, well, it might sink, well, then you need lifeboats for everybody on board. And there wasn't any reason to sail with half enough lifeboats. It was either we don't need any or we need all of them, one or the other. I don't know what their thinking was, but that was the state of affairs. I didn't make it that way. I'm just reporting it. Same thing is true here. You either have enough food for everybody on the planet or you don't. And enough food for everybody on the planet is a one-year supply for everybody. We're down to 38 days, boys and girls. That's about as close to the cusp as you can get it. And any kind of an upset that hits us, an economic collapse, something on that order, is going to spell a disaster. So these three books now, remember, Hungry Planet, and then the author of that, just in case you want to write it down, is Peter Menzel and Faith D'Aluzio. And that's Faith D with an apostrophe, A-L-U-I-S-I-O, and Peter Menzel, M-E-N-Z-E-L, Hungry Planet. Now, I got to give you a mid-course reminder here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about these Chinese and about the predictions for the future. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening or are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4900. 67. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page and download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about Hungry Planet. During the last Great Depression, a lot of people went hungry, but it wasn't because there wasn't plenty of food. It was a breakdown in the economic system that precipitated the emergency. It lasted for about 10 years. From October of 1929 to March of 1933, a period of 3.5 years, the stock market in the United States went from its high to its low with a loss of 89%. Most people believe, that is, most of the people that are outside of the mainstream press, that's the underground press, that is the conservative view in America, is that we will go through a similar period. And if that's the case, then we can expect our stock market to drop by somewhere in the neighborhood of 90%. So let's say it goes 70, 80, 90%. How is that going to impact upon you with your stocks and your 401k? If it's going to impact upon you negatively, then maybe you should start thinking about taking action. Now, during the 1930s, we had a complicating factor called the Dust Bowl. We had a great drought that occurred at the same time. I suspect that the Great Depression was probably engineered by our Creator, and that the great drought that accompanied it was probably a part of Leviticus 26 coming to pass, where he said, "And if for all of this you won't repent," says, "I'm going to lay on you, lean on you, seven times harder for your sins." I suspect that what we're beginning to see now with these hurricanes like Hurricane Katrina and Rita, with the blowout of this oil well in the Gulf, with the collapse of our paper money system, with the unemployment, the outsourcing, and the offshoring of our jobs, and with the monoculture that we've adopted, with the soil destruction that we are experiencing, that with the vaccination rate nearly 100%, fiat paper currency, a 38-day food supply worldwide, the threat of a nuclear war, disease, deception, Jerusalem encompassed by armies, 50% of the people of the world living within 30 miles of the coasts when we were told to flee to the mountains, earthquakes, volcanoes, and weather upsets, and a sunspot Carrington effect, which occurred in 1859, called an EMP event. Not a nuclear bomb now that the Russians are going to detonate, but sunspots. Now, you add all of that up, and it looks like to me that God has his fingerprints all over what's going on today. And so if I was a detective, I would say, we're looking for fingerprints from God himself. Now, let me take a look at a couple, three more of these. Alpha and Omega Report, trends forecast. Going into 2010, they view, the trends seemed to lead nowhere or towards oblivion. Geopolitically, the Middle East was and is trending towards some sort of military clash, most likely by mid-year, but perhaps even sooner. At the moment, it seems 2010 is shaping up to be a year of absolute chaos. We see trends for war between Israel and our neighbors that will shake every facet of human activity. In the event of war, we see all other societal trends being thoroughly disrupted. Iran will most likely shut off the flow of oil from the Persian Gulf. This will have immense consequences for the world's economy. Oil prices will skyrocket into the stratosphere and become so expensive that world's economies will collapse. There are also trend indicators among economic lines or along economic lines that point to the potential for a total meltdown of the world's financial system, with major crisis points developing with the change of each quarter of the year. 2010 should be a meltdown year for the world's economy, regardless of what goes on in the Middle East. Notice that almost every one of these commentators here is looking at the world's economy, looking at the fiat paper money system, and saying, hey, wait a minute. Everybody is in agreement that it's unsustainable. These people are picking 2010 as the crisis year. Every one of us knows, deep down inside, that whether it's 2010, 2011, 12, 13, that this thing ain't going on the way it is forever. And the fallout from it, the repercussions that are going to come from it, are going to affect all of us. Let me tell you a little story here while we're thinking about it. Let's suppose that you live in the city, and you have a home, you have a house, and you have a backyard, And you've got a front yard and a backyard. You've got lawn planted in your front yard and you've got lawn planted in your backyard. Unless you're planning on eating grass, lawn is probably not what you want to have there. Now, when I go to Hawaii and I look at the Japanese over there, I never see grass planted in a Japanese yard. They have vegetables in their yards. In Hawaii, the people who are most likely to survive and survive the best will be the Japanese, number one. The Hawaiians, I don't think, have the subsistence and survival mentality that the Japanese do. It doesn't mean that everybody's going to die in Hawaii, but I suspect that all of the white men in Hawaii are going to die. And that's because the Hawaiians hate all whites and call them howlies, and the Japanese hate all of the whites because of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And when the system breaks down, I suspect for you people in Hawaii that there will be no whites left drawing breath in those islands. That'll just leave the Japanese and the Hawaiians, and then if you want to know who I would pick to be the ultimate survivors, it's the Japanese. The ultimate survivors will be the Japanese. And that's because they know how to plant, they know how to prepare, they know how to subsist, they know how to survive. When I was over there, I noticed that the Hawaiians, when I asked them about, well, do you eat all of this native food over here? And they said, no, that's pig food, we don't eat that. So the wild fruits that are growing there in Hawaii, I mean, you can't. It would be almost impossible to die in Hawaii from starvation because there's so many wild banana plants and wild passion fruit plants and wild everything growing around there. But they say they don't eat that. They eat the food that's shipped in from the States. That's why they have bad health and they're obese. The Japanese aren't. So take that one away in your heart and say to yourselves, I wonder if I can learn a lesson from that. Now, going back to your city, if you've got 5,000 square feet in your lot, and assuming that your house is about 2,000 square feet, then give us a little bit of room for some waste space. You know, you probably have a garage or you have something on that order. If you have 2,000 square feet of dirt space to grow on your lot, you can feed six people there year-round. Six people year-round on the space that you have on a 5,000-foot lot. Now, that's a lot 50 feet by 100 feet. So just ask yourself, do I have a lot 50 by 100 feet? And if you do, you've got what it takes. Now, the Rodeo people have been working on and they've been studying organic growing methods. Tuck in your heart now, the Rodeo people, look them up on the web. And they publish books and information on growing, and particularly on things like organic growing and small family plots. Looking here at the corn yield comparisons by production type in 2006, it is important to keep in mind where increased food production is most needed. It's in developing countries, especially in Africa, rather than in the developed world. Recent studies in these countries have shown that low external input methods can improve yield by more than 100%. That's called low input methods. I'm going to underline that. And then over here at the Rodale Institute, farm manager Jeff Moyer oversees fields of organic and conventional corn. The Rodale people routinely on organic corn produce 160 bushels to the acre with their no-till operation. Pennsylvania's average is 120. Using chemicals and BT corn and whatever else that people want to use. So the idea that organic agriculture will not feed the world because it's uneconomical or that it doesn't produce enough is nonsense. It produces more. What you've been listening to are deceptions and lies. Now, I wanted to point that out to you because on your own lot where you live, now, if you're living in Manhattan in an apartment on the 35th floor, you know, you've got a big problem. You need to store food. But if you're out here in the suburbs someplace and you've got a place and you're growing grass and spending a lot of money cutting grass and then paying somebody to haul it away, instead of doing that, why don't you use that grass for compost, tear up your sod, use it for organic material, and then plant your organic seeds, your heirloom seeds from Baker Creek, and you'll be able to feed yourself and your family right there on your own lot. While the rest of the country starves, you'll be able to feed yourself. And your neighbors might be able to feed themselves too if they would get after it. So I thought I would tell you those two little pieces of information. Now, Robin Landry, market expert, says, I believe that we're headed to new market highs between 10,700 and perhaps 11,000 over the next few months. The most likely time frame for the top will be April to May of 2010. Remember, the evidence IMHO still says we're in a bear market rally with a major decline to follow once this rally ends. Now, that's another thing that everybody here has got in common. What we're in is a bear market rally. Bear market rally, which is being sustained primarily by the plunge protection team. So tuck it away in your heart. It's probably, more than likely, probably going to come to an end this year. If not this year, then be looking hard and heavy for next. Things are not good right now, and they're getting worse as we progress along. Now, of course, we're not being reminded of any market conditions because of the oil spill out in the Gulf. That's the number one news story, which leads me to believe that that may be a false flag operation. There's something wrong with that deal out there with that oil spill. I'm not quite sure what it is, but my gut reaction after watching the Twin Towers escapade is a black flag operation. I'm sitting here saying, you know, I don't know whose fingerprints are on it, but that thing's starting to look fishier every day. John P. Hussman, Ph.D., had this to say. He said, in my estimation, there is still close to an 80% probability, called Bayes' rule, that a second market plunge and economic downturn will unfold during 2010. Robert Prechter, I guess that's Prechter, founder of Elliott Wave International, implores retail investors stay away from the markets for now. Prechter, who was bullish near the lows in March of 2009, now says the stock market's in a topping area, predicting another crash in 2010 that will bring stock prices below the 2009 low. His word to the wise, be patient and don't rush it. Keep your money in cash and cash equivalents. Richard Mogi, current research director at the Foundation for the Study of Cycles. Because of a convergence of numerous cycles all at once, the stock market may go up for a little while, but will crash in 2010 and reach all-time lows late in 2012. Mogi says that the 2008 crash was nothing compared to the coming crash. Gold may correct in 2009, but will go up in 2010 and peak in 2011. Silver will follow gold. James Howard Kunstler put it this way. He said, the economy, as we've known it, simply cannot go on, which Kunstler has been saying all along. The shenanigans with stimulus and bailouts will just compound the central problem with debt. There's not much longer to go before the whole thing collapses and dies. 6 months to live, the economy, that is, especially the part that consists of swapping paper certificates. That's the buzz that I've gotten in the first 2 weeks of 2010. Peter Schiff, on March 13, had this to say. He said, in my opinion, the market is now perfectly positioned for a massive dollar sell-off. The fundamentals for the dollar in 2010 are so much worse than they were in 2008 that it's hard to imagine a reason for people to keep buying once a modicum of political and monetary stability can be restored in Europe. In fact, the euro has recently stabilized, and my gut reaction is that the dollar sell-off will be sharp and swift once the dollar decisively breaks below last year's lows. Many of the traders who jumped ship in the recent rally will look to reestablish their positions. This will accelerate the dollar's descent and refocus everyone's attention back on the financial train wreck unfolding in the United States. Any doubts about the future of the U.S. dollar should be laid to rest by today's announcement that San Francisco Federal Reserve President Janet Yellen has been nominated to be vice chair of the Fed's Board of Governors, and thereby a voter on the interest rate setting, 7-member open market committee. Ms. Yellen has earned a reputation for being one of the biggest inflation doves among the Fed's top players. Schiff is famous for his accurate predictions of the economic events of 2008. Now, our government here in the United States, for your information, if you're somewhere outside the country, is that we are looking at $1 trillion a year deficits as far into the future as we can forecast, 8, 10, 12 years. And this year's deficit's going to be out around $2 trillion, 1.8, 1.7, 1.6, something in that neighborhood. I mean, we're talking about real money here. Now, as time progresses along, 2010, 2011, 2012, everybody's in agreement that this is unsustainable. And what this is going to finally break down to is what we started off today talking about was Zimbabwe and hyperinflation. These people are opting for hyperinflation, so the depression that you're all looking for won't come until after the hyperinflation has run its course, and it usually takes about 18 months, sometimes a year, sometimes two, but in the neighborhood of 18 months for hyperinflation to run its course. Now, in Zimbabwe, the hyperinflation has been going on for 4 years. I mean, those guys down there have strung this thing out about as long as anybody could, but it finally came to its end. Just about a month ago, they started phasing out the Zimbabwe dollar and bringing in foreign currencies now to do business with. All right, we got a guy here named Lindsay Williams. Dollar devalued 30 to 50% by the end of the year. It will become very difficult for the average American to afford to buy even food. This was revealed to him through an Illuminati contact, an insider. Okay, so here's an insider with the Illuminati. He says, you know, by the end of the year, you may not be able to buy food. So now while it's available, now's your chance. That is the average American. Now you poor Americans are going to have an even tougher road to hoe. Let's see what else we got here. Peter Schiff. Here's an unnamed government economist. He said, what we have experienced over the past 2 years is nothing to what we're going to experience this year. If you have a job now, you may not have it in 3 to 6 months. Speaking about August of 2010. The stock market's going to fall. That equals a Great Depression. Foreign investors stop financing debt. That equals collapse. 6.2 million are about to lose their unemployment. And by the way, here in the United States, there's another wave that has just taken over of people now who have run out of their unemployment insurance. See, in this country, we count you as being unemployed, and the rate of unemployment, they told us last month, was 9.7%. So what they're counting is the number of people that are drawing unemployment insurance. But the people who were drawing unemployment insurance a year ago, 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, and their unemployment insurance ran out and they still don't have a job, they're not counted. If we were counting them, and the way we do that is what they call the household survey. In a household survey, you go around to 1,500 houses nationwide and you say, if you got any unemployed in the family, how many people in the family are working age and how many of them are working, and then how many of them are unemployed, and you add those up. The unemployment rate in the United States is 22%. Actually, 22.78%, which is bordering 23, but I rounded it off, 22%. 25 was the peak during the Great Depression. So we're only 3 percentage points off of the Great Depression highs right now as I speak. We have not hit the bottom or anywhere close to the bottom yet. Not even close. Real estate, commercial real estate has to collapse. Only half of the housing market has collapsed. There's still another half of that to collapse in all of the commercial real estate market. The bond market has yet to collapse. The states have yet to collapse, and the municipal corporations have yet to collapse. That hasn't happened yet, but they're all insolvent. And remember, we're talking about this thing of the fiat paper currency. It now encompasses the world. It's not just the United States that has fiat paper. It's China, Japan, Russia, England, all the European countries, everybody, everybody. And now we've got sovereign government defaults. And we're all pointing our finger at Greece. Listen, the fundamentals of the United States are four times worse than they are in Greece, which is why I'm suspicious of this oil spill. Nobody's talking about money today. They're talking about oil in the Gulf. Keep your eyes on the money. Keep your eyes on the money. Fiat paper currency. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that we're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule, and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.